Herzlich willkommen bei Milch und Kontur mit Adam Thompson von We Were Promised Jetpacks.
We start with a little game. It's sometimes you have to complete sentences and sometimes it's just a short question.
Okay.
The first sentence you have to complete is Scotland is...
Brilliant.
The last song that I heard is...
Probably one of our own. I think it's called I've always got the different names for it. All That Glittered. It's a new song.
From the new album.
I was just listening to it because I was practicing an acoustic version of it.
Do you remember the last song that is not from your band?
Probably listened to the new song from Big Thief. I think it's called Certainty. Listen to that.
My favorite film is?
Forrest Gump.
Germany is for us.
Exciting.
My last visit in Germany was?
2019.
Do you remember what the occasion was?
It would have been us playing concerts. I think we did a run of shows in September 2019. So we went to Berlin and Hamburg and a couple other places.
My opinion on the elections in Germany on Sunday is?
Interesting.
From which building can you personally enjoy the view the most? Is there a building you enjoy?
Probably my apartment. I'm on the 9th floor. So okay. I get to see a little bit, yeah.
Do you have a special connection to milk?
I used to drink so much milk as a kid. I would have it like by the pint glass. Because it was always like growing up, it would be like, you know, healthy teeth and bones. You got to drink lots of milk. So that was like that was like my favorite drink for probably too long. But yeah.
And do you still have this habit?
No.
Why did it change?
I'm not sure. I just started drinking less milk overall, and I've moved to, I'm now an oat milk guy. but yeah, it's just a bit weird, you know, if you're like a teenager drinking pints of milk.
If you weren't a musician, you'd be?
I'm not sure. Some sort of, maybe like a teacher school or something, yeah.
What would you teach? Would it be music or what?
Maybe music, or maybe just the little ones, where it's just a little bit of everything, a bit of drawing, a little bit of language, all that sort of stuff, yeah.
To start the conversation, I think it was you who said a long time ago, it's rainy and miserable in Scotland, and there are lots of angry people. In a way, that's a big part of why our music sounds the way it does. Would you still say that and maintain that for the new album that you released on September 10th this year?
Probably not, because I can't. I remember like maybe 5 years looking it up to be like, where did I say that? Because I couldn't remember it. And I did say it in an interview or something, but it wasn't really something that I was thinking too much about. I guess around that time when we were starting, a lot of people were asking like, what is it with Scottish bands and why do you sound like you do? And it's like, I don't really know. There's a million different reasons that a band sounds like you do and everyone's influenced by each other. So it was sort of that, but there is. I live in New York at the moment, so like it is interesting getting used to like a summer and seasons and nice weather that you can rely upon. There is something in Scotland where it is quite cold and rainy and dark a lot of the time. So maybe that brings people indoors and overall the mood is a little bit less. I'm not sure if circumstances are different for me now, but seems a little brighter over in New York. But I'm not sure exactly why I said that, but I mean, there are angry people in Scotland, but there are angry
also angry people in Germany.
Angry people everywhere. Yeah, I mean, I guess I must have been a kid, like 1920, when I said that. So, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of experience of, you know, traveling or seeing what everywhere else is like. But yeah, everywhere else is angry too.
I don't have to introduce you to our audience, but maybe you can give us a like short update on like how did We Were Promised Jetpacks start? Like, you started in Edinburgh as a school band, if I'm,
yeah,
if I'm
school.
Right. And then you moved to Glasgow. How did it start and why did you or move to Glasgow? Maybe you can tell about the difference between Edinburgh and Glasgow.
Sure.
For bands.
We started playing music together in high school when I think our first show was when we were maybe 15 or 16. I was friends with Sean, the bass player. We just met in a class called computing, where we learned how to type on a computer. And then he had a music lesson, a drum lesson. But anyway, the four of us just started playing music together. And obviously, when you're like 15, 16, you don't think you're going to still be doing it, you know, 16, 18, 17 years later. But we started off just playing, and we played a high school battle of the bands. Was our first show, and we won that from like 8 or 9 bands. So from the get-go, we were okay. And we just started playing more and more. And then when we were 18, we all wanted to go to university. So I wanted to go somewhere that was close to home, but not at home. So Glasgow's only an hour away. So a few of us applied to go there and we got in there. It was also like Glasgow, we'd visited, you know, from Edinburgh because it's only an hour away, and been to see shows there at venues. There seemed to be a slightly larger selection of music venues. So we'd been through to Glasgow a lot and we knew that there was, you know, a good music scene there. So that was undoubtedly part of our thinking as well. So when we were 18, three of us moved to Glasgow. Darren, our drummer, moved to Stirling, which is between Edinburgh and Glasgow. So we were all still pretty close and just kept the band going, but weren't taking it, you know, super seriously. It wasn't like, you know, we weren't careerists. It wasn't like we are going to do a career in this. It was just something that we did for fun.
If you had to say like the best things and the worst things about Edinburgh and Glasgow, what would that be?
I think perhaps with Edinburgh, it's the way the city's put together. You have this like old castle that is built on, you know, the hill that dominates the centre of town. There's a lot of history there, a lot of pretty things to look at, loads of museums and everything like that. It's like great for tourists, which is also maybe a downside sometime, that there's a lot of tourists there. And you know, in August, there's a big arts festival and the city swells to like 2 million people or something. There's normally 500,000, and it gets a bit much, you know, if you're trying to live and work in Edinburgh. Glasgow's certainly got a reputation of being a little grittier, more working class, down to earth, more community, more like funnier people. That seems to be like something that Glasgow's known for, because they were sort of shipbuilding and all that was their main industries. So there was a lot more of that in Glasgow. Glasgow seems to be a slightly different type of culture, more underground arts culture. So I think they both complement each other really well, but there's a place for both of them, definitely.
What is the name of the festival in Edinburgh? And
it's the Fringe Festival, it's called. So it's music, art, film. it's everything, and every single space is turned into a venue. Comedy, it's a massive comedy festival as well. So every pub, restaurant, venue, garden, every little inch of space is taken up by people performing, which is like an amazing thing to have on your doorstep. But, you know, after 33 of them, you know, like, it was quite nice to have a year off it last year.
You started in 2003, isn't that right?
Yeah, but then...
I think a lot of things also changed for you, like Michael Palmer is not part of your band anymore. You live in New York. Maybe you can tell us, what is the secret for you to keep band together for that long time? Even there, if there are changes, what is for you the most important to successfully keep a band together?
I think underlying respect of each other and a genuine fondness of the people in our band. I genuinely love the guys in my band and would die for them. And we respect each other. You have to respect each other. Otherwise, it is strange being, because Darren and Sean are, you know, my two best friends, but a lot of our life is wrapped up in band and business stuff. And, you know, sometimes won't talk to them about friend stuff for a couple of weeks because it's all like trying to get band things sorted. But we all know that we all like each other and we get on and we have a good laugh when we, you know, we're out there playing shows and everything like that. But I definitely think you have to respect one another. You know, if people want to tour or don't want to tour or want to do something one way, you have to listen to everyone's opinions and yeah, just be really, really respectful of one another.
Do you like have a hierarchy in your band that there's one like boss or like always like democracy in your band? Or
yeah, like, I suppose. I mean, I get I'm slightly more bossy and temperamental than the other two guys, but it works really well for our dynamic works. The guys have known me long enough to be like, oh, be quiet, you know, if I'm getting worked up or about something. So we all sort of help each other. And yeah, I think I'm definitely a bit more confident with dealing with people or things. So yeah, I'm probably a de facto leader. I've made a coup.
Okay.
But yeah, probably so. But we all decide everything together. There's like, I would maybe push my preference more than the other guys, but we all decide things together.
You released your album Enjoy the View on September 10th. What would you say is the thing you are the most proud of this album?
I would probably say how hard we worked on it. It's the thing I'm most proud about, because we had to write in a different way than we normally do. We had to adjust a lot. Normally we would have us and our instruments in the same room and we would be vibing off one another. You know, someone plays a cool riff and then I'll play something on top of that and then it snowballs and you've got, you know, the start of a song. But we started writing it the day that the UK went into lockdown, and we were doing it all separately. So we had to learn how to record ourselves and send projects to one another and communicate in a way that was like we had to talk a lot more about the songs rather than be like, how about we just play it like this? You know, it had to be a lot. I like that, but how about we take this back a little bit and we push this up and we add this little bit in? And there was like, there was a lot of that. So it ended up being, like, it kept me sane during the early part of lockdown, because I did lockdown most of it in Scotland at my parents' place. So, you know, it was like I wasn't seeing my wife because she was in New York and I was waiting on a green card. And, you know, the other guys were at home. No one was seeing each other. So it was like we had to put a lot of work in because it's not how we normally write. And it was good fun, even though it was stressful and it took a long time. Like, I still had fun with the guys and I still remember laughing a lot. And, yeah, and really enjoying it. I was proud of us as working as a small team together to keep going, because a lot of the times playing in a band you really have to fight to keep morale up, and you know, to keep thinking of the positives, because you know, for every fantastic show that we have on the road, there's, you know, months at home going like, what am I doing here? This is difficult. So yeah, I was really proud of us working our way through it.
I think there are a lot of bad things that you can say about the coronavirus. Is there something good or something that you learned with your band? Maybe you said like we communicated in a different way. Is that something that helped you also in your...
I enjoyed doing that, especially because at that point I knew I was going to be moving to New York. So writing songs in the future was going to have to maybe be a bit more like that. So coronavirus was we just got to start this a bit earlier. This practice of writing songs apart from each other. So that was definitely something. I mean, it definitely made us realize that we love touring and we love playing shows. And that's the nice thing. When COVID hit and lockdown hit, our band was in mentally quite a good space. Like, we just had a great tour of the US and we were enjoying touring and we were really excited about going back. I'm glad that, you know, COVID hit when we were at a happy point with the band, because I can imagine, you know, if like we didn't have an album to write, or, you know, there was just a whole lot of unknown, it might be quite difficult to go back into that way of life. But I think even after this time, we still want to do it.
There's one title on the album that's called Blood, Sweat and Tears. Does that also describe the process of the album? You just said that you're very proud of all the work that you put into it. Is that something that describes it a bit?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I hope we've not shown everyone all the blood, sweat and tears that's gone into it and they can just hear a final nice product. But definitely there's a lot of dark moments, or like just wondering if it's the right career path, or is this what I should be doing with my life, or is this just, you know, something that was like a high school thing that should have stopped a long time ago. But there's something there for us that it's just like, find it. Like, I'm looking for reasons to stop, but I can't find them.
Is why are you living in New York? Is it permanently there?
I met my wife over here when I was traveling, and we did the long distance for a while, and then was waiting on a green card when COVID hit. So, but I got over here last November, so been here almost a year.
And Darren and Sean are still in Scotland.
Yeah, they're still in Scotland, in Edinburgh. But I went to visit, and we played some music together last month. And I'm going over like two or three times again before the end of the year. So still going to get back to play music. But it's definitely strange because we've always been used to living very close to each other and sort of rehearsing once or twice a week, like just to go in and play. So it's strange not doing that, but we just have to adjust.
Before we go into the songs that are on the album, I'd like to ask you a question about the cover art and the
sure.
title, because I think the cover art is really nice.
Yeah.
Maybe you can describe it, and what was the idea of the cover art and the title of the album?
Yeah, the artwork was done by Dave Thomas, who has now done 4 out of 5 of our albums, and he's done our EP and live album. So he's been pretty much our main guy. And his standard of work is so high, and I enjoy working with him because you have big, long conversations about, you know, what the album's about. And then I'll say something to Dave and he'll sort of give his opinion or his thoughts on that subject. And then between that, we'll kind of be like, there's an idea. And then, you know, Dave will go off and do it, and then he'll send us something. And more often than not, the first thing that he sends is perfect. So we had a discussion with David about the artwork, and we were looking at a lot of things about perception and being in the same situation, but depending on your mental health or your outlook, how the situation looks. Like, I could be looking out a window, the same view 2 days in a row, but one day it looks hellish and I hate it. And the next day the view looks fine. It's actually all right. So it was a lot about perceptions, and that was kind of what we wanted it to be, that we wanted it to be like a graphic, a drawn artwork, because we wanted it to be slightly surreal. But yeah, it was all about slightly different perceptions of things depending on what your outlook is. And the artwork itself is, it's like from the back wall of four rooms looking out in front of a building, each with a window. And each sort of, every element in the artwork has been drawn from the lyrics. So we'd have a chat with Dave about, you know, what songs are about. I would send him a big long list of objects or little bits of information that I thought might be good, and then Dave incorporated it all into the artwork. And it's like straight away it's like really striking, and it helps set up like a world for the album to exist in. And we were so happy with it.
These rooms are quite empty. There's a ladder reaching from one room to the other. And in one room, there's a video camera, like a surveillance camera.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the idea? Why is there a camera? You said it's a lot about perception.
Yeah.
Why these elements in the rooms?
It's all... Another thing that we spoke about is trying to have each element maybe mean two things. Or, you know, if you're looking at it, it could be a positive thing or like a nice thing. But then if you look at it in a different way, then it's quite sinister. And it's like that's sort of the thing with the camera. It's like why would you have a camera set up in a bedroom or a room? And then already that's just like makes you think about what is going on there. But that the camera was taken from a song called I Wish You Well, about the line is if all that we've ever done is ever recorded. So yeah, it's taken from that song.
Do you have a favorite song on the album? Maybe it also changes like from day to day. But
yeah.
Is there a song that it's like for you personally more than the others at the moment?
At the moment, I think I actually like the first song, Not Me Anymore, it's called. It's the one that's a little bit different. It doesn't have any guitars in it. I think just because we rehearsed as a full band a month or so ago, and that was the one that I enjoyed playing live the most, which I didn't really expect to, but I really enjoyed singing that and performing it, and I think it's going to be really good when we get to play it live. So it's quite nice feeling that way about a song that you've written, that you're like, I like this and I'm looking forward to singing it for a year.
I mean, everyone knows the Quiet Little Voices. That's the song that's also...
That's the big German hit, isn't it?
It's
like any indie disco from like...
Yeah.
Is
there any hope that there's another hit like on this album? What do you think would
probably
be the hit?
Probably not. No, I think we've never tried to recreate that success or the popularity of that song, probably because we knew that it wasn't something we planned or thought, you know, like let's write a hit. We just did it and it worked out really well, so it's not something that we've ever tried to do again. And to be honest, probably only a few years ago I realized that it's very unlikely that we would have a song again that would be that popular. So I've sort of made my peace with it and be like, you know, if that's our big song, then that's our big song. I'm happy enough with it. It's three chords and took about 10 minutes to write. But yeah, it certainly resonated with people, and especially Germany. Like that song is in Germany is probably bigger for us than anywhere else.
There's a song on the album that's called Fat Chance. And in the music video, you're like filming from a train journey.
Yeah.
And there's a line, it doesn't matter where you've started, it doesn't matter where you've come from,
yeah.
It matters where you're going.
Yeah.
What was the idea of this song and maybe also the music?
I mean, the idea of it was, I'd been through a bit of depression myself and I felt totally down and out and like that I was never going to bounce back or I was never going to get there. And I really felt like that. And then before writing this album, between the last one and this one, I started to feel a bit better and started to feel like, oh, I don't have to feel like that or be like that, or, you know, life isn't always going to be miserable. And I just wanted to get that across. It's more a message to myself than anybody else that, you know, okay, wherever you are right now, whatever's happened to you in the past, whatever you've been through, doesn't have to determine what you're going on to next. And you can be a better, brighter, happier person. Don't let your history or your past stop that. So I was trying to like actually write a positive song and, you know, and keep it like that. Those words are exactly what I was thinking. It's just like, you know, it doesn't matter where you've been, what you've been up to, what's going on. You can turn this around.
There's another song that's called If It Happens, and you already talked about it. The combination, like the title, Enjoy the View, and a title like this, If It Happens, is also for you or for the band, kind of you're more growing up, you're more adult, you're more relaxed, you're more like taking whatever.
I think that with If It Happens as well, that was another song when I was trying to get that across, that, you know, people can spend an awful lot of time worrying about things that don't exist, things that haven't happened yet, things that have happened, like that whole like living in the moment, living in the present. There was about a year of my life that I was like, I was just there. I was in this sweet spot of like, I am not bothered about the past or the future. I am just like happy right now, doing my band stuff, going to visit my wife. Like it was like a really simple time. And that's kind of what I was like, where I was trying to approach writing the album from. From like feeling like that. And If It Happens was, yeah, like another reminder to myself that, you know, just roll with it. Whatever happens, happens. And it's entirely dependent on how I view it or how I process that information will determine if I'm happy or not. So it was a lot of that.
Coming to the conclusion that it's also like a waste of time to...
Yeah. When you could just be enjoying yourself, doing something you like. But it's so hard to get out of that headspace when you are feeling like that. When you're worried about something past or the future or whatever, it's so difficult to dig yourself out of that sometimes.
When do you realize for yourself, or when do you notice that you are okay with the song, that the song is good like this and it doesn't have to change anymore? There's something, and has that changed maybe through different albums that you made with the band?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, because you can, you know, if we had more money, we would spend way more time recording, that's for sure. Like but there is a sweet spot of, you know, not overdoing it. Or you get past the point of what the song was about or the purpose of the song if you have too long to mix it or master it. So there's all those sort of... Sorry, what was your question again? I just forgot it.
Like when do you notice that it's a good song? When do you say it's good like this? Has it something to do maybe also with the lyrics that you say?
Often with that. Yeah, it's difficult to sort of say when a song's finished. It used to kind of be when the four of us were in a practice room and we'd finish playing it live and all four of us would be like, ah, that's it. Like, I'm happy with what I'm doing. Everyone individually is happy with what they're doing. but they're also like everyone is feeding off each other, or you're like, if one person stops, the other person's playing, and like you just play it enough that it becomes like natural and you get into a cycle, and it's like, and slowly these parts come in and then it's just like bang, done. And like that was always easy to know that the song was done like that. If we're writing live, I find it easier to know when the song is finished. It's a bit more difficult if you're writing on like laptops and sending projects, because I can open up like 100 different tracks, and you know, I can put down a piano melody and a vocal melody and another guitar one, and then like, you know, you just keep adding to it, and it's like, you know, this isn't serving the song at all or helping. It's just confusing matters. So it's a little bit more difficult. We didn't really finish these songs until we finished mixing them, I would say, which is different for us. On our last record, The More I Sleep, The Less I Dream, we had all of the songs like finished, like lyrics, vocals, all of the music finished. So we went in and we just recorded what we'd written. And that was like a nice way of doing it. That was what we wanted to do for that record. But for this one, it was much more like chipping away at a big block for a long time, tiny little chips at getting it shaped up right, because the three of us were editing the track and putting our own spins on it and then sending it back to each other. And then, so there was an awful lot of that. And then even up to recording it, we were adding instrumentation and taking things away. So it was a bit more experimental for us. I would say it's not as relaxing as having everything finished when you go in. That's a super relaxing feeling. Like, oh, all of the songs are finished. We're totally well prepared. Let's record them. So yeah, it does change from album to album and song to song. You're never 100% sure, but I usually find when we write live together, it's easier to know when it's finished.
Are you perfect? Do you say that perfectionist? Like,
are you
the one in the group or the others?
I am not the perfectionist. Michael, who left the band, he was probably more the perfectionist than anyone. I get quite bored and frustrated at recording studios because it's such a laborious process. Technical. Yeah. And like that's not how I operate at all. I'd much rather hear the final version of the song and then be like my heart didn't move at the right second. Like those are my notes. But like, I'm definitely not a perfectionist. I'm quite relaxed in the studio.
Do you also want to send a political message with the album? I thought about when I saw the cover and the camera in the room.
Yeah.
I thought maybe also you want to say something that's maybe a bit controversial and maybe wake people up or
it's
comment odd on things. Yeah.
It's odd that, because I have never felt I've never felt inclined to do that with music or my band. It's not something that I've truthfully ever really considered. I wouldn't know how to start a song like that, trying to express something so serious and in like the frame of a song, and as well just like just me singing it when it's a band of four other guys. We're all politically lean the same way, but it's something that doesn't come natural to me. And even controversy doesn't come natural to me. Like the idea of being controversial makes me anxious.
Okay.
So it's not really something that I would feel comfortable putting in a song. I definitely like think it can be a great use of a song, is to say something that is more universal and more people can relate to, or it can, you know, move people to do the right thing. But to be honest, I just don't think I'm good enough or I have that talent to do that. So I genuinely generally stick to just sort of writing about things closer to me or how I'm feeling or what I'm going through. That is definitely more of a comfort zone. But it's something that, you know, like 5 albums in and, you know, 14 years singing songs, it's something that I am thinking about. It's like, how can I approach songwriting differently or say something differently rather than just like going over the same old, I feel a bit sad, now I don't feel as sad sort of thing. But yeah, I don't feel super comfortable about like, here's my intention to write a political song. It would have to come naturally and it's just not happened yet.
When did you first realize you could be a singer, a professional singer? Was it always clear, or for you?
No.
Were there people around you said like, with this voice, you have to be on the stage? When did you realize that could be something that you do maybe your whole life or for more years? And did you always like to be on a stage? 2 questions.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit of a show off, as we would say. I like to show off. If there's a group of people, then I would tend to do something for a laugh or for attention. So I definitely think that side of things, I definitely notice it compared to the other guys in my band, that I'm the frontman singer because I like attention. But as far as singing goes, I used to sing Elvis when I was like 4 or 5, and like I had a wee Elvis suit and a little portable microphone that I would carry around with me, and I would sing Elvis. So I always had it in me.
We still need a cover photo for this episode, yeah. So maybe you can send us a photo.
Go. I will. So yeah, I've always sort of performed a little bit. I got mostly into sports in my younger years, and my dad was a bass player. He played in like rock bands in the 70s, and then like traditional Scottish music with violins and banjos when I was growing up. So music was always around me around the house. And then I think I picked up a guitar when I was maybe 13, but no one really said, oh, you should do that. That's not really what Scotland is like. Scotland's more like, shut the fuck up. Stop playing. but no one really said, oh, it's something you should do. And it wasn't ever something that I thought that I would end up doing. I just knew that I quite liked it. I was into other bands and thought, ah, we could give that a go ourselves. It's funny, even thinking back, we did a Twitter listening party for our first album a couple of weeks ago. So listened to the whole album again, and we were sharing memories of that time. And I remembered that we'd recorded the album and it was going to come out on Fat Cat Records. And we got an email from them saying like, oh, we're getting some tours lined up for you. And like, I couldn't believe that we were going to go on tour. I couldn't, like, in my head, the next step from recording the album was then, oh, you would then tour. And like, I got an email with like 60 dates, and like, we were going to the US for like 6-week tour. It was bonkers. And I suppose on that tour, the first US tour we did, there was like people coming out to see us play. And it was like, oh, this is strange. This hasn't happened before. So I think we knew that we had something pretty early on, especially with that album. It really seemed to connect with a lot of people. So, I mean, every year is a struggle to keep doing music, but around that time, just after our first album came out, is probably when I thought we could give this a good go.
Do you remember a concert maybe in Glasgow, Scotland, or maybe also abroad, maybe in Germany, when you realized that you have always or still in mind as one of your best concerts, and why were those concerts
Yeah, there's one in... Yeah, there's a few that stick out in my head. There was one in Berlin at Lido. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, just a really full, generous, warm crowd where there's no dickheads in the audience. Like, you normally notice there's at least one or two per show. But sometimes you just get a show where everyone's really nice and you feel great and everyone in the band feels great and, like, it sounds good for everyone on stage and it sounds good out front. And, like, that mutual, like, feedback loop of positive energy is, like, it really can't be beaten. It's the best feeling ever. So there's one in Lido. There's always one I remember at the Music Hall of Williamsburg in Brooklyn that was, like, I think this was like 2010 or 11, so pretty early on in our career. And like the green room was like up the back of the building at the other side, like upstairs. And we could feel like the whole building shaking from like people like wanting us to come back on. And like, Aaron, like we all remember that, all four of us remember that moment being like, wow, what is going on? And we did a show in Glasgow in December 2019. That was an anniversary show of our first album, and I think it was our biggest ever headline show, and that went really well as well. So yeah, there's a few standout ones, but yeah, for the most part, we really love touring. It's not something like that we do and like we moan about after or hate doing. Like, we really love doing it. And more often than not, our shows are like great and we really enjoy them. But there's definitely a few standouts.
Earlier we talked in front of the before the episode, we talked about Münster, because you when we talked about Germany, you remembered the Gleis 22 in Münster. How was your experience there?
Great. Always loved our shows there. Everyone's so nice to us in Germany. There's people, I think we went to like an after party, like some people that were at the show were like, oh, would you guys want to come back?
And in Münster?
Yeah, in Münster. Oh, yeah. We went to like a couple of parties at people's flats and like, it was like a nice time. It was like, it wasn't weird, which sometimes it can get weird if you like hang out with people that have been to your gig. But no, everyone was really cool there. And like, you definitely don't forget those sort of nice moments. And I will say, like, in general, this is something that I don't know if you speak to many other bands from elsewhere, but Germany has a fantastic reputation for like looking after bands and, you know, feeding them and giving them a nice place to hang out before their show, or you know, they've got like bunk beds or hotel rooms for you. Like, it's really appreciated in Germany. You get looked after well. There's always nice big tasty beers.
And like, do you have a preference? Like, what's your favorite beer?
German beer? The Augustina Helles. You know
Augustina
that one?
Hell, yeah.
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 That,
yeah.
That one is, but that's like because there's a couple of pubs back home that stock it. So, like, I drink it quite often back here, but they're like €8 at home. but yeah, love the whole German beer culture.
What's the worst German beer? Do you have
Beck's
is the worst? Okay.
Yeah, I just don't like it. What do Germans think of Beck's?
I think it's got a quite good reputation. Actually.
Yeah. Well, I apologize.
Drink it alone.
it gives me a headache for some reason. One beer.
I think it depends on the people. I think it depends on the taste. But yeah.
No offense, Beck's.
Do you, you already said like something that you really, really like about Germany, especially for artists. Do you also have something that's really strange? It comes like in comparison to Scotland or something when you came to Germany, like said, oh my God, oh, what's like, what, is the, what are you guys doing? Or what's
the smoking thing like blows my mind. Like
that they're smoking in bars?
Well, first of all, pretty much every German person that I know smokes cigarettes. That's like one thing. And it's like constantly, like it's from like from minute one of chatting to a German, they're just like lighting up cigarettes. And like, I used to smoke myself, but like going to like venues and like hanging out in like a very small backstage room, and then the German support band comes in and like smokes like 500 cigarettes, and I'm like, I need to sing, and like I need to sing for 90 minutes. Like, yeah, the smoking in venues is like, it's now pretty weird to us when visiting. It's just very different. Like, I remember in Scotland when you could smoke in clubs and venues, and you were just used to it. It was normal. But yeah, that's definitely something that is weird.
Do you like listen to German bands, or like maybe to older artists, or what is maybe
I don't listen to a whole lot of German artists, to be honest. There's a couple of bands that we've toured with that I really like and know the guys in the band. There's a band that we toured with called Astaire that we like touring with, and then there's a band called Newfoundland that we like as well. But there's not a whole lot of German stuff that we listen to. Tickets for Rammstein next year.
All right.
In New Jersey. Classic. Yeah. But nice. To be honest, not a whole lot of stuff.
But do you in general listen to a lot of music, like to get inspiration, or more?
No, I don't. I tend not to listen to music for musical inspiration. I find it hard to do that. I find it hard to think about doing that and be like, I'm going to stick on this band to try and get me going. If I hear something, then it's more subconsciously that will like influence stuff. So I don't tend to do that. I usually, when we're writing music, I tend to listen to less other people's music because I find it distracting if I'm like in the zone of writing songs to then listen to like another band doing something and then like be like, why are they doing it like that? Or so yeah, I tend to listen to a little bit less music when I'm writing my own, and usually I enjoy music more for like just walking about, or you know, you're not thinking about it too much, because before you know it, you're like, you're trying to dissect a song and like, how long did that verse go on for, or what did they use a new chord there, or you know, oh, they took out the drums there, or there's the bridge. Like, I find like to sort of listening to music, sometimes listen to it a bit too analytically.
Is it like critics about your band, do you read them, do you what do you think about, like,
I read
there are a lot of, yeah, sorry,
I read every word that they say
and then you call them and you say what the fuck.
Yeah, and I remember to never talk to them again. No, but I think I started off not caring what people wrote, and then I cared a little bit, and then I didn't read anything for ages, and then I did read stuff, and I've read a bunch of reviews for our new record, and like yeah, they're okay. I've definitely taken things to heart a little bit less. Or I'm like, it's like, yeah, it's like everyone. If you get a review that is like, makes a valid point and is well written, and it doesn't like your album, and like, fine. Like, I know that our music are not, you know, there's no music out there that is out there for everybody that everyone's going to like. But yeah, I do read most of them when they come in, because like, I usually get like notifications on Twitter that like, here's a review. And like, there was one site that gave us like a 3-star review, and for some reason they tweeted it like 8 times, and it just like, it kept coming up on my phone, and it wasn't like a particularly nice review. So it'd just be like, I'd get my phone out of my pocket to look at it, and it's like, here's that review again. But I definitely remember reviews, and I'll definitely read them and take them in, but tend not to take it too much to heart because it doesn't really matter.
When we look into the future, what are your plans for the near future? There is a tour planned, I think, in 2022. Yeah. Where are you going? And maybe you can, what are your hopes for the near future?
Sure. Well, I hope all of our shows sell out forever. that is the hope. Yeah. But yeah, we've had to reschedule a few tours due to COVID and all that, but it's looking like everything is going to be okay and happening now. So we're playing, we've got a tour in the UK in the start of December. And then in February, we will be heading over to Europe, and we'll be playing a bunch of places in Germany. I think our tour starts off in, where does it start off again? Let me just check, double check this so I don't get it wrong. Amsterdam, yeah, on February the 8th. And then in Germany, we're playing in Cologne, Hamburg, Berlin, Munich, Saarbrücken. Yeah. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
And Wiesbaden.
Not in Leipzig. That's sad, actually. You play in Saarbrücken, but you don't play in Leipzig. That's sad.
Are they close?
No. But I like if there's maybe a town for or like for concert and known for culture, it's like maybe
similar,
more Leipzig than Saarbrücken.
Cool.
But it's I don't know. But well, good you're
luck,
welcome in Leipzig anytime.
I
don't mind. Saarbrücken is nice. I think it's nice. But you have to come to Leipzig one day.
We do now that we've met, definitely. But yeah, that's in February. It's like a 2-week tour or something like that. We also head to Paris and Belgium and Luxembourg. And then
it's so nice that you get to see so many places now as a musician.
It is really nice. And if you've got like a good band and good crew with you, it can be like really nice. We try and enjoy touring more now and like get up a bit earlier and like go and do stuff. And like we, like for a couple of days before we get to a city, we're like looking up good places to eat. Whereas, you know, when we were touring when we were younger, it was just like we wouldn't see anywhere or do anything or appreciate anything. So that is like a slightly nicer thing about touring in your mid-30s. You're like, where's the good coffee? Where's the good breakfast spot? And like the thought of going out all night is like, no way. So we tour in Europe then, and then we've got a 6-week tour of the States in March and April. And then the plan is just to keep touring for 2022 and try and tour as much as we can, because we obviously haven't because of COVID, but even before that we hadn't toured very much. So just want to get back out on the road and doing what we love doing.
That's great. We're looking forward to the tour, and at the end of this episode, the artist can always give a recommendation, like one one band or one song that you really like, and one book if you like to recommend one book to the audience. Do you have something in mind?
Yeah, I would go for, it's a friend of ours called Fisker. He's got an album out. He's recording it with the guy that plays guitar with us is Andy Monaghan from the band Frightened Rabbit. And he plays live with us, but he also has this other project with our good friend Ross, Ross Clark. And together they did an album. I'm just going to look up what it's called. The band is called Fisker.
Right.
And the album is called Cold Hands Burn Slow. That is the music that I would recommend. And I'm just going to grab the book that I'm reading at the moment, because I can't remember name of it.
Yeah.
I've just about finished this one. It's called The Insult by Rupert Thompson, that I've really, really enjoyed. So that was the.
Is it because of the last name?
Yeah.
That you like it?
Yeah, yeah.
No. No, what's it about? What is it about?
It's about a guy that sort of, he gets shot and taken into hospital, and he loses, they say he's lost his eyesight, but he can get it back at night. And it's just about him sort of navigating that and why he's able to see when everyone says that he can't. And yeah, it's interesting.
Nice. Thanks a lot for your recommendations.
No problem.
Tonight we had on the show Adam Thompson from We Were Promised Jetpacks. Nice to have you on the show. Thank you very much for the conversation.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.